You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. If you're looking for some encouragement, words of hope, and maybe a laugh or two, that's exactly what Richard wants to share with you today. We know life can get pretty busy and complicated, so we're truly grateful you've chosen to take a break and listen to the program. Now, if you're not able to hang out with us for the entire program, you can always pick it back up at our website, richardellistalks.com. In fact, you can find all of Richard's talks right there waiting just for you, richardellistalks.com. So, with today's talk, here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Less is More. And there are a lot of things in life that applies to, and I'm not going to go over all of those for the sake of time. But I want you to turn to Judges. Now, it's near the front. You may have never read anything out of this, but if you go to Genesis and take a right, go a few books. If you find Deuteronomy, keep going right. Then Joshua, Judges is right after Joshua. And there is a story in here that there's no way I'm going to hit all of it, but I'm going to try. There's about three chapters in here that we're going to kind of glance and fly through. And we're going to begin in Judges chapter 6. And this is kind of the story, basically, of a guy named Gideon. And if you've ever stayed in a hotel and stolen a Bible, it's a group that's named the Gideons, and they put Bibles out there in hotel rooms and all over the place, different buildings, but mostly hotels. And this is the same Gideon in the Bible. But this guy, Gideon, lived hundreds and hundreds of years ago, obviously. And I'm not going to give you a whole lot of history, but I want to just light on some verses here in Judges chapter 6, and we're going to start with verse 1 and see how God gets this guy and what he does with this guy and how God works, and hopefully answer the question why less is more in the case of God. And the reason you say, well, what the heck's in Judges? You know, let's just go up here where Jesus is. This stuff can't apply to anything nowadays. Guys, read the Old Testament. There is awesome stuff in the Old Testament, but it's a package. And there are things in the New Testament, frankly, that you will not even understand if you don't read the Old Testament. Because just briefly, in the Old Testament, you have literal wars. When you go to the New Testament, there are some wars in the world that involve Christians, but now, instead of being physical, literal wars, they are spiritual wars. And what I don't want you to miss out on is this. The physical wars were unbelievable in the Old Testament. Physical, literal battles. But they have not changed. It's just gone to a different realm. There are literal battles going on now, but it's in the heavenly realms. It's spiritual. The Bible says we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but principalities and powers and the rulers of darkness in high places. You say, well, I don't believe in that. Well, then your life's getting wrecked by what you don't believe in. But in Judges chapter 6, verse 1, it says, then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. Now I could stop right there and camp on any of our lives. The children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. What happens? There are consequences. You reap what you sow. If you do evil, God is going to discipline you. God is going to address the stuff in your life. You say, well, nothing's happening. It's coming. They did evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord delivered them in the hand of Midian for 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel. Because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made for themselves the dens, the caves, and strongholds which are in the mountains. These people were so afraid, they were hiding in the mountains and caves and dens, and they would sneak out and plant crops, if you keep reading, and they'd plant all these crops, and when the crops came in, the Midianites would come in and just mow down all, wipe out their crops, and they had nothing to eat. It was a nightmare. And why does God allow this? Because if this is what it takes to get your attention and my attention to turn us back to Him and say, okay, Uncle, we screwed up. We need your help. Have mercy on us. That's the process. And guys, it is over and over. You read the Bible, it is chapter after chapter. This king did the right thing in the sight of God and was blessed. This guy did evil and boom, all heaven or hell broke loose on him. And it's just like clockwork, up and down, up and down. Whoever's doing the God thing, usually God bless, protect. But in this case, God removed his protection and these people were running and hiding in caves. Verse 6, so Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. And it came to pass when the children of Israel cried out to the Lord because of the Midianites, that the Lord sent a prophet to the children of Israel who said to them, thus says the Lord God of Israel, I brought you out from Egypt and brought you out of the house of bondage, and I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of all who oppressed you and drove them out before you and gave you their land. Also I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, but you have not obeyed my voice. And there's the bottom line. God says, I can show you and tell you about all this stuff I've done for you and how I've delivered you and protected you, and I can still do that. But the reason you're in the situation you're in is you have not obeyed my voice. You don't have to be afraid of these people. You don't have to wonder and worry about how to protect yourself. I'll protect you, but you're going to have to obey my voice. Verse 11. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth tree, which was in Ophrah. Not the same one. But anyhow, which belonged to Joash the Abiezrite. I'm glad I didn't live back then. What if we were all called Dallasites and Forthworthites and all this junk? While his son Gideon threshed wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from the Midianites. They're still hiding. The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, the Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. This is the angel of the Lord speaking to Gideon. So he says, I'm with you, you mighty man of valor. Gideon said to him, oh, my Lord. That's where that phrase comes from. Anyhow, oh, my Lord, if the Lord is with us. Now, guys, verse 13, if you have a pen or a pencil, underline this, because people ask this question all the time. You've asked this yourself, or someone you know has asked or is asking this or is going to ask this. He has just said, I'm with you, Gideon. And Gideon says, oh, my Lord, if the Lord is with us, then why has all this happened to us? If God is on our side and is with us, then why are all these bad things happening to us? And where are all his miracles, which our fathers told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us out from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hand of the Midianites. Verse 14. Now listen and watch this. Then the Lord turned to him and said, go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you? So he said to him, oh, my Lord, how can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan is the weakest. Now, guys, some of you say, well, I'm not from the right family, and I'm this and that. I don't have this. I can't do that. Moses even said it. I stutter. I can't speak right. Send somebody else, God. He says, how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh. I'm not from a prominent family, and I am the least in my father's house. I'm not even the oldest son. I am nobody. You know what? We're all nobody. And usually God has to use somebody who's nobody because the people who are somebody know they're somebody and God can't do anything with them. So he finds humble people who know they're nobody without God, and God can do something in them and through them. He says, I am nobody. Verse 16, the Lord said to him, here's what you're looking for. Surely I will be with you. Gideon, it's not about who you are and what you can do anyway. I will be with you and you will defeat the Midianites as one man. It'll be like you against one person. And you keep reading in the next few chapters, guys, there's hundred something thousand of these Midianites in just the army alone. Then he said to him, if now I have found favor in your sight, then show me a sign that it is you who talk with me. And I'd recommend, I can't read all this in Judges chapter 6, but read what he does. He makes this sacrifice, puts it on the altar, and this angel touches the rock, and boom, this fire comes out of it and consumes this sacrifice. And he goes, oh, I guess you're who you say you are. So pretty good sign. But look down in chapter 6, verse 36. Have you ever heard the term fleece? You know, I'm going to put a fleece out and see what happens. All this stuff comes out of the Bible. Gideon, seeing this rock break into fire and consume a sacrifice, verse 36. So Gideon said to God, if you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said, look, I'm going to put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor, fleece of wool, piece of wool, on the threshing floor, if there is dew on the fleece only. Now, this is what's so wacky about fleeces. You say, okay, God, I'll do what you tell me to do. If a purple Ferrari comes by tomorrow at lunch, you know, you got all this wacky stuff that if God complies with all your fleece stuff, you'll do what he says. Well, this is a wacky fleece. He says, because if there is dew on the fleece only, when dew hits, guys, it hits everything. But he says, if I wake up and there's dew on the fleece only, it is dry on all the ground, then I'll know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said. So he got up the next day. He rose early the next morning, squeezed the fleece together. He wrung the dew out of fleece, a bowl full of water, and the ground is dry all around it. The reason I'm reading this stuff, guys, is because we are just as goofy as Gideon. Okay, God, I saw you do that. We'll do this. Okay, well, I saw you do that. We'll do this. And we keep pushing God. And he says, okay, verse 39. Then Gideon said to God, now look, don't be angry with me. I don't want you to get upset. But let me just say one other thing. Let me test, I pray, just once more with the fleece thing. Let it now be dry only on the fleece, but on all the ground let there be dew. Let's reverse the fleece. Not the fleece wet and the ground dry. Now I want the fleece dry and all the ground wet. Let's see if you can do that. Guys, what are we thinking? Either he's God or he's not. Either he can do it or he can't. And see, some people can read all this stuff and then they still push God. Say, okay, we'll do this. God is God. He either can do it or he can't. And you've got a book full of promises. That's why I tell people, read the book. See what God has said. See what he has done. Let him do it in your own life. Stop testing. I mean, there's enough here to keep you busy forever. And God did so that night. It was dry on the fleece only, but there was dew on all the ground. Gideon's convinced. God's with him. He's going to do this thing. Judges chapter 7, verse 1. His name was Jerubbabel, that is Gideon. That was one of his names. I think somebody did him a favor going with Gideon instead of Jerubbabel. And all the people who were with him rose early and encamped beside the well of Herod. And this is one of my favorite stories in the whole Bible. So that the camp of the Midianites was on the north side of them by the hill of Morah in the valley. And the Lord said to Gideon, now get this picture. Gideon has got all these troops together. They're going to attack the Midianites. God has promised to be with him. And he's got thousands, you'll see here in a second, of people behind him ready to attack the Midianites. They're still outnumbered, but God's with them. Now look how goofy God is. Now guys, this is where the less is more comes into play. It is not by power, it is not by might, but it is by my spirit, says the Lord. That's what the book says. And you think I got to have more talent, more money, more whatever, or it can't be done. The Lord says to Gideon, verse 2, the people who are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands. You got too many people. Yeah, what? We're outnumbered as it is. We're going to send them back? Too many people. Now, what is God saying to Gideon here? Well, here's what he says. Look at the rest of the verse. Lest Israel claim glory for itself against me, saying my own hand has saved me. And the guys, I don't know where you've been so far, but listen to this. God is going to orchestrate your circumstances and your life so that no matter what it is you face or need to be delivered out of or from, you are not going to be able, when it happens, to say, well, me and God did that. And share credit. God is not interested in sharing the glory or the credit for anything. He is interested in getting the glory because he deserves the glory. So he will orchestrate it where you can't get out and make it happen without him doing it, period. Anybody ever been in one of those situations? And you don't like it that way because I want to be able to do something. And God says, there's too many people with you. I want them gone. Get rid of some of these people or you'll try to say, well, God helped us, but we're strong and we did this thing. Now, therefore, proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, here's what you go out to your thousands of troops and say this. If anybody's fearful and afraid, he can turn around and go home from Mount Gilead. And 22,000 of the people return and 10,000 remain. 22,000 say, well, there's my answer. I'm out of here. Boom, they're gone. 22,000 people left. They had come willing to fight. And Gideon says, if you're afraid, most people going to battle are afraid. If you're afraid, go home. They left. So he's down to 10,000. But the Lord said to Gideon, still too many. There's still too many people. Bring them down to the water and I will test them for you there. So a river of some kind, a lake, down to the water. Then it will be that whom I say to you, this one will go with you, the same shall go with you. And whoever I say to you, this one shall not go with you, the same will not go. When you get down to the water, I'll tell you how to decide who to keep and who to let go. So he brought the people down to the water and the Lord said to Gideon, here's how we're going to do this. I'm going to cull them out this way. Everyone who laps from the water with his tongue as a dog laps, you shall set apart by himself. Likewise, everyone who gets down on his knees to drink. What? He got 10,000 people down at the water drinking water. And he says this, every person, every guy who gets down on all fours and puts his mouth in the water like a dog and drinks, put them in one pile. And everybody who gets down like on one knee, scoops up the water and gets it out of his hand, put them in another group. Out of 10,000, you know how many did which? 300 got down on a knee and drank like this. And the rest of them got down on all fours. Now, what difference does that make? You don't want people who are about to go into battle who are more worried about water than watching the enemy. 9,700 of them said, I'm thirsty, put their head in the water. They get killed that way. So God says, I want the ones who are alert, who are more interested in staying alive than drinking water, who got down and could still watch what they were doing. The number of those who lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, verse 6, was 300 men, but all the rest of the people got down on their knees to drink water. Then the Lord said to Gideon, by the 300 men who lapped, I will save you and deliver the Midianites into your hand. Let all the other people go, every man to his place. Now, guys, it's one thing to be by yourself. Then you have tens of thousands, and God calls it in and says, it's you and these 300 guys who can drink water right. If you do not start with this premise, that it is God and me that's going to get this thing done. If you're starting to find how many people you can, get a crowd, money, machinery, people, whatever you think you need, you leave God out, it's never going to happen anyway. Gideon said, all right, I'm starting with the fact that God has said he's with me, he's going to take me through this. Now, if God says all we need is 300, it's not my problem, it's his anyway. We start with the natural and work backwards to God and say, okay, God, I got my side set. How about your side? He said, I'm not interested in your side. I'm interested in my side being the only side so that when it happens, I get all the credit. And we spend so much time trying to organize and orchestrate our lives so that we're so protected and we've got all of our systems set up in case God doesn't come through, this is how I'm going to make it, right? Well, you're trusting God? Yeah, but if I don't have a job by Tuesday, I'm going to do this. I'm going to step in here and take matters into my own hands. Be still and know that he's God and either trust him or not. So these 300 guys are all that's left. Everybody leaves. He's still afraid. Now, I think I'd be a little afraid too because there's over 100,000 troops. And you see the description here. If you look at the Midianites' army, it said it's like the sand of the sea. There were innumerable camels. It's just this massive. It would be like the Bosnians going up against the Americans and thinking they're going to win. That's how bizarre this is. And we over on our side go, you're crazy. We've got air power. We've got all this stuff. There's no way this little dictator over there is going to take us out. Let me tell you something, guys. If you turn this thing around, I'm not trying to make this dictator a godly guy, but you take those same odds, that guy over there against us, if he had God on his side, he could punch us with a thumb. See, we measure everything in the natural realm and say it's about power and strength and military might. They had all that stuff going on back then too, and God would come along and go bing, and they were destroyed. Now look how this thing happens. Gideon is afraid, so God says, you guys go down to the camp and listen to their conversation. Verse 13, and when Gideon had come, there was a man telling a dream to his companion. He said, I have had a dream. To my surprise, a loaf of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian. It came to a tent, struck it so that it fell and overturned, and the tent collapsed. Then his companion answered and said, this is nothing else but the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. Into his hand God has delivered Midian and the whole camp. There is talk in the enemy's camp that they've had it, that there's some Gideon guy out there going to come whip them. Verse 15, and so it was when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation that he worshiped. Huge word. Take time to stop and worship. When God speaks to you and says everything's going to be okay, then pull aside somewhere and say, Father, I thank you. I praise you. I worship you. I thank you that you know me. I know you and everything's going to be okay. And take time to thank him for who he is and what he can do, and it's not dependent on who you are and what you can do. Then he divided the 300 men. Here's his battle plan, and then we're done. Last few verses. He divided, verse 16, the 300 men into three companies, and he put a trumpet into every man's hand with empty pitchers and torches inside the pitchers. Now, guys, if you know anything about battle, it ain't about trumpets and pitchers. Every one of these 300 guys, he gives him a trumpet, this horn thing in one hand, and in the other hand, there is a pitcher. Upside down with a torch on the inside of it, okay? Must have had some kind of air or whatever, but this pitcher protected the torch so you couldn't see the light. He gives them all this, torches inside the pitchers, verse 17, and he said to them, look at me and do likewise. Watch, and when I come to the edge of the camp, you shall do as I do. Do what you see me doing. When I blow the trumpet, I and all who are with me, then you also blow the trumpets on every side of the whole camp and say, and this they're supposed to scream this out, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. Okay, there's 300 guys, they got their horns, their deal, they're going to get around this camp, surround this place, and on a certain signal, they're going to scream out, the sword of the Lord and Gideon, and Lord, that's going to scare them. Verse 19, obviously it did. So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outposts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just as they had posted the watch, and they blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers that were in their hands. So this sound, 300 guys blowing these trumpets, usually a trumpet guy with a trumpet would be in front of a whole group, a whole army of people. So these guys see a torch in a second, hear this sound, think there's thousands of people about to pounce on him in the night. He blows his trumpet, broke the pitchers, verse 20, and they held the torches in their left hands, the trumpets in their right hands for blowing, and they cried, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon." And every man stood up, the whole camp, these 100-something thousand guys, every man stood in his place all around the camp, and the whole army ran and cried out and fled. They were terrified. There had been rumor in the camp anyway that God was with Gideon, and when they heard the sword of the Lord and Gideon, they got up and took off running. When the 300 blew the trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword against his companion throughout the whole camp. They started to kill each other. They couldn't tell in the night. It was dark. They didn't know who was who. So literally the Midianites are fighting and killing each other. They didn't know what was going on, just kept hacking each other to death. Every man's sword against his companion throughout the whole camp, and the army fled to Beth Acacia toward Zerarah as far as the border of Abel Meholah by Tabitha. Oh boy, glad we got those out of the way. They hook them. And if you keep reading, I won't take the time to do it. Well, chapter 8, verse 10 only. There were 15,000 who survived this. 120,000 men who drew the sword had fallen. 120,000 people were killed by 300 people. But the 300 people didn't even have a sword. 120,000 people killed each other, and that's why they died. And 300 people, if you read chapter 8, are still chasing the 15,000 out of town. Now, the reason I do these messages periodically is for this reason. You better know who your God is, or you're in a heap of trouble. And sometimes the enemy gets us in such a rut, and we get in our life, our problems, we look down, we look around, all we can see is what we can see. We do everything in the natural mind, the natural way, and we think, I got to solve this, I got to figure this out my way. And God bursts on the scene and says, wait a minute, I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. I brought people out of Egypt, out of bondage. If I can do that, I can do it now here. Look at me, listen to me, trust me, do it my way. Let me get with you and behind you and in you. I can change your life and your world if you'll do it my way. Obey my voice. Now, as simple as I can get it, guys, ask yourself this question. Am I obeying God or am I not obeying God? Am I listening to His voice or am I not listening to His voice? If you are obeying God and listening to His voice in your life, it's not that everything's going to go great, but God is going to bless you. You're going to have protection like you wouldn't have otherwise. If you say, nope, I'm going to do it my way, I can show you page after page, hundreds of years worth of people's lives being destroyed because they said, forget you, God, we're going to do it our way. So if there's an area of your relationships, your life, your money, whatever it is where you have said, no, I'm going to do it my way, you better get ready, and you probably already know there are consequences. And what these people finally did, the consequences got so great, they cried out mercy. They said, Lord, forgive us. We're wrong. You're right. We're back. And God begins to deliver them through a guy like Gideon.
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellistalks.com. You'll find today's talk right there in the Talks page, along with all of Richard's messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link to connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, a radio station finder, all our social media links, and much more. So check it out. RichardEllisTalks.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
Now think about it. Just simply think about it. What is it that you're running from God about that you're suffering the consequences? And what is it that the devil is telling you? The enemy's coming and saying, you're not going to make it. You're not going to make it. There's things that just wreck our lives and our minds and consume us. Just say, God, what am I thinking? If you can't do it, nobody can. And I have the same sword of Gideon with me that Gideon had. I mean, you're my protection. If God be for us, Romans 8:31 says, if God be for us, who can be against us? But you got to start with the truth and the knowledge that really God is for you. He is not against you. And greater love has no man than this, than a man lay his life down for his friends. Jesus came, laid his life down and said, look, if me dying on the cross, being buried and raised from the dead doesn't tell you I love you and I'm for you and I'm on your side, what am I supposed to do? What else can he do? Trust him or don't trust him. But guys, if you choose to trust him, you're going to see powerful, unbelievable things happen in your life. One of the other reasons I go over stuff like this is because people look at a little church like this and say, what can you do? Let me tell you something, nothing without God. But I'll tell you this, 300 or so people with the God of the universe can take out hundreds of thousands. And in this case, it's not destroying the enemy. The enemy is not the people around us. The enemy is Satan himself and what his schemes and devices and what he's trying to do to destroy people's lives. And I'm telling you, this God who can do the same thing to literal troops can move through a city like this with a group of people who know more than how to drink water right, who are committed and say, you know what? We want to see what God can do by his power and by his might, where he gets the credit and the glory, and there's no way possible anybody could have done it but him.
Thanks for tuning in today to Richard Ellis Talks. With the busy schedule everyone has these days, it means the world to us that you would take this time to listen. Let us know how it has touched your heart by calling us at 855-6-RICHARD. You can also connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. One last thing, Richard Ellis Talks is a daily program, but also has daily costs. And being a listener-supported program means we rely on the financial partnership of our listeners, which means you. Maybe you've given to this ministry before or have waited for the right time. Well, we believe that these talks with Richard are making a difference in your life. So this is how you can make a difference to ours. You can contribute by giving us a call at 855-6-RICHARD or at our website, richardellistalks.com. Thank you for your very generous gifts. It truly means so much to us. God bless, and thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.